little bit of bass as well.
You can turn it up a little bit, just a teeny bit. Yeah, that's fine.
Hey, test mic.
Rolling?
Okay, I'm recording whenever you're ready.
Let's do it, man.
Hi, this is Sean Colvin.
And Steve Earle, and we are Colvin and Earle, and this is Come What May.
First song we ever wrote.
Welcome to the sessions at Midori House. I'm Andrew Muller. Either of our guests this week would more than merit a session of their own, and indeed one of them has. Steve Earle was here 3 years ago. This time, however, he's accompanied by Sean Colvin, a long and deservedly acclaimed artist in her own right, and now half of Colvin and Earle. Sean and Steve played three tracks from their eponymous debut album and explained how their partnership finally came together.
Up now to town, open any door. Take a little thing together in between the wars. Can't live without each other, can't take it anymore. Something's gotta give, but it never did before. Sleeping under bridges on linen sheets so white. Lazy summer mornings, crazy Saturday nights. Working on an angle, but we never get it right. We're never giving up because we might. You say, I'll come back to you. Come what may, come what may. North wind, south wind, east wind, west. Where it's gonna carry us is anybody's guess. And when we ain't together, I don't love you any less. Standing by the highway all alone. Good times, bad times, nothing ever lasts. Better be tomorrow than it's already past. Looking at the bottom and it's coming up fast. Stopping on a dime before we crash. No matter what you do, no matter what you say, I'll come back to you. Come what may, come what may. Time at all, dark is not a day. You hear me when I call. Come what may, come what may.
Sean Colvin and Steve Earle, welcome to the Midori House Sessions.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is, you've been talking about it so far as not really this project a collaboration. This is an entirely new entity, hence the name Colvin and
Earle. Yeah, it's a band. It's a group. And, I mean, it's a collaboration, but it's not, they're not duets per se. They're not.
I hesitate to compare it to anybody, but for me it's kind of like Simon and Garfunkel. Do you know what I mean?
And or Crosby, like, Stills and Nash rather than I mean,
just expect the singing together.
Yeah, more like Crosby, Stills and Nash, just because we did have careers before this. But it's not. I'm not scared to compare it to anything.
And how smooth or otherwise was that collaborating process? Because is that a common thing for either of you to do, to actually sit down and write a song from scratch with another person?
Not for Steve at all.
Not for me at all. I've done it a handful of times, and we did the collaborative process is. The songwriting process was really easy, and so was making the record. I think we butted heads making the record precisely once, and it was just over. Sean decided that a song that I considered to be completed needed a bridge, and I was in an anti-bridge period of my life, and so I got adamant about it. And but that was, and it turned out I was right about it not needing a bridge, but I wasn't right about bridges in general, because I've since written a song with a bridge. So it's one of those deals.
Which I won't let him forget.
You got to get those things if you write songs long enough.
But for me, the difference was when I co-write, mostly I co-write with John Leventhal, which starts with him generally giving me some music, and then I kind of go off in a corner and write the lyrics. We're not in the same room. I mean, from time to time, I'll come up with a lyric here and there while we're working. But basically, I kind of go off into my corner, and I didn't know anything else to do but that. And so you've let me go off in a corner, like the first song when Come What May came along. And after that, I didn't need to do it.
I think the process was us in the same room, though, than it was. More than it was with you and Leventhal.
It became
right?
that. Yeah.
So this is second song we wrote. it's called Tell Moses. 2, 1, 2, 3.
Water is white, milk and honey on the other side. Water is white, milk and honey on the other side. Keep on traveling along. Selma, Alabama, 1965. Gotta stick together if we're gonna stay alive. Ride gear and tear gas, sheriffs on the edge. Across the bridge, tell Martin, tell him go. Say the governor's in Montgomery, and he gotta let him know. Tell Martin, tell him now. He's been up on the mountain, and he's gotta show us how. Water is white, milk and honey on the other side. Water is white, milk and honey on the other side. Water is white, milk and honey on the other side. Keep on traveling along.
It's a big question to ask you, having just released the first album as Colvin and Earl, but have you had discussions or thought as far ahead as whether there will be more of them?
Yeah, we've talked about that.
Yeah, there will be unless something gets in the way of it. We're going to have to do it on purpose. We had to do this on purpose. It took some planning, and it took... So we were rehearsing in Nashville a few weeks ago before this tour started, and it occurred to us that if we're going to do this, we should start writing while we're on the road together. This, you know, as soon as we settle into a groove on the North America tour, we got to start writing together on some of the days off instead of just laying around watching baseball and going to movies. We're going to have to do some work if we want. It won't happen. When we get home, we're both single parents. We both have separate careers, and one thing will lead to another, and it won't ever get written if we don't at least start the process while we're out here singing together.
On the score of the writing, though, I do need to ask, is the current presidential elections getting the protest muscles twitching at all?
For me, it always does. We'll see what happens. And I'm writing, you know, a couple of records. I'm writing one, a solo record for me that's almost finished. And, you know, that's going to depend on just what happens. We got, you know, Tell Moses is pretty political. You know, I write records. I've written two albums in my life that were designed to be political statements. And they were one right after the other. I'm never not political. Pete Seeger said that, you know, lullabies are political to babies. And it's like, you know, I don't think of it, though. I think that's why my political songs, like, kind of hold up sometimes better than some others do, because I don't, they're still just songs about human beings in a way the world affects human beings to me. I mean, there's a few exceptions. There are a few that are purely rhetoric, but not that many in the ones that I've written. So the odds are against us writing a whole record and there being it being completely and totally unpolitical just because I'm half of it, you know?
Yeah, I don't have that gift. I certainly feel passionate about a number of things, but I'm kind of personal politics when it comes to writing. I mean, you know, internal, relational politics, that kind of strategizing and power trips.
and I learned that from, I mean, I can write those kinds of songs, but I'm way better at the other thing, and I end up doing more, looking inward, way more writing with Sean, just because it's the way she writes. You know, not everybody can do it. Not everybody can write political songs. It's not, not everybody should try. it's a tough thing. I hate to say this, and I'll probably really hack somebody off here, but I was a big Clash fan, but I always thought that Mick Jones was a way better writer than Joe Strummer was as a songwriter. And I have very high standards when it comes to the poetics and the craft of songwriting. And they were strong political statements, and they were really cool. He had a way of putting stuff together. And he hated me because I was an American and I wasn't Joe Ely. But it was one of those deals. It just, you know, I wanted to impress him as much as anybody else did. But I like, you know, it's hard to write political songs without them becoming purely rhetoric, and I try for them not to be. I wrote John Walker's Blues because I have a 20-year-old son at the time, exactly the same age as John Walker Lind. He's 35 now. His name's Justin, and I saw a 20-year-old strapped to a board on television, and my reaction to it was as a parent. I went, "Oh God, he's got parents, and they must be sick." And that's what it was about for me. I was writing that song as a parent.
Yeah, this is Come What May was the first song we wrote. This is the last song that we wrote for the record.
Well, not the last song ever. The last song.
No, not the last song ever.
Hopefully.
That's the one we finished for this one.
Two, one, two, three, turning back now.
hear the door slam while I'm leaving. I always remember that sound. Don't remember who pulled the lever. Don't remember who made the call. Maybe the truth is neither one of us ever loved anybody at all. You're right, I'm wrong. I knew all along.
You've been listening to The Sessions at Midori House. Today's guests were Sean Colvin and Steve Earle. Their self-titled album is available now on Decca Records. More details are at steveearle.com and seancolvin.com. And you can hear Steve Earle's previous Midori House session in episode 24 of The Culture Show. Join us again at the same time next week for live music from Hot Chip frontman Alexis Taylor. For the time being, I've been Andrew Muller. Thanks for tuning in.